don't need no education.
Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Well, good morning, KLBB listeners. This is Education Nation, and I'm your host, Rebecca Hagstrom. And I'm here with my co-host, once again, Pete Hagseth.
I am excited to be here, as always.
Yes.
Always had way more coffee than you, so always a little bit more hyper.
I know.
But that's the function I serve.
And here. I think you usually have more coffee than I have by this time of the day on
always.
Saturday mornings.
all the time. I'm thinking about an IV drip.
That's how important
it is to me.
That would be dangerous. But we are excited because we are joined today by Senator Chamberlain, who represents the Llano Lakes area at the state legislature. And we are so thankful for having you join us today. And welcome to Education Nation, Senator Chamberlain.
I'm honored and pleased to be here between Pete Hagseth and Rebecca. Two people have done a lot for the nation and for kids in the community. So
thank you
very much. Great to be here.
Great. Well, remember a few years ago, I met you actually when you were visiting Liberty Classical Academy. And I think you had been invited to one of our tours by, was it April King?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was so impressed with all the work that you had done. And honestly, at that point, I wasn't familiar with who you were.
Should you have been?
You were a new senator at that time. But my understanding is that shortly after that, you actually named Liberty Classical Academy from the floor. And that was really exciting news, and that just tells me how impressed that you were with the program, and we were just so happy to be able to share it with you that day.
Well, yeah, when I visited the school, I don't often come almost close to tears, but to see how the students respond to the faculty and mm-hmm. the concern and care that the faculty has about for their school and for their kids demonstrates how effective that classical style of education can work and how much kids will benefit. So mm-hmm. I bring them up all the time. Other good schools, there are good schools out there. Mm-hmm. They're one-offs.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to promote the ones and use them as shining examples mm-hmm. against the failing system that we have now.
Well, yeah. Senator, no, that's it. That's why I send my kids there, and why we believe so much in Liberty is that dynamic that is so evident when you see it. So we're grateful for those that take the time to come and see it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And for those that step up and fight for it in St. Paul, because mm-hmm. Education Nation, the point of this show is to educate on issues related to education, inspire people to be more involved and invested and have a real sense of what goes on. You've taken a step to be a representative. Before we dive into the details of the legislative session or even the education aspect of it, because there's mm-hmm. a lot that happened around education in this mm-hmm. session, tell us about Senator Roger Chamberlain, because I've heard from a lot of folks I respect that respect you a great deal, mm-hmm. And you've been over there fighting. Tell us how you got into public service and what motivated you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very kind of you and very kind of them. Well, I had mentioned this a few weeks ago at the convention, and I boiled it down to this. So I was thinking why you did it. So why did I do it? And I tell people who know me will understand this. I have a toast, God, Family, Republic.
Mm-hmm.
On my neck, I wear a cross, never mm-hmm. comes off.
Mm-hmm.
On my finger is a ring for my mm-hmm. wife and my family, mm-hmm. and it only comes off when we work or play hard, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in front of my house, the flag never comes down because the light's on at night. I truly, truly believe in those things with my heart and soul, and that's why I ran.
Mm-hmm.
And that might sound a little hokey to some, but
not at
it
all.
Gets right to the core. God, Family, Republic, I believe in those things. I believe they mean something. They still mean something, and I want to do what I can to preserve it as long as I might. If the good Lord wills, I'll keep doing it. We'll see where it
mm-hmm.
takes me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
good
why
for you.
I started it.
Amen.
Good for you. What was, may I ask, what your other life entails?
My other life?
Yes.
Well, shameful self-promotion. I work for, try to maintain another job working for Thriving Financial.
Okay.
As a financial rep, a great company, a Christian-based mm-hmm. company, but they serve all citizens, financial services,
mm-hmm.
serve the community. And, of course, I have a family and live in Llano Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
Kids are grown. They're out of the house. They live close. And I like to have a cigar on the deck with a whiskey and listen to country music.
Which means you were affected by the most recent tax proposal, correct?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, funny enough, last year they tried to Last budget cycle, they tried to tax beer and liquor, and then people really get upset.
That's when you hit them in their beer and their liquor. That's all I want is a payback for this segment, is a drink and a cigar on your deck. Can we arrange that?
You can do it any time.
All right.
You're always welcome. So was there's a good friend over there. So.
Yeah, no, we're joined in the studio by a couple other folks from the Senate, including friend of ours, Jimmy Knutson, dynamo of the Minnesota Senate, and friend of all of ours. I will say this though, so you all look a little blurry eyed. Everybody in this,
I'm very tired.
It looks blurry eyed because you've been busy. Now, busy can be a good connotation or a bad connotation.
Yeah.
Tell us about this legislative session. Generally speaking, what did you hope to get done? And not necessarily dipping into education yet, what did you hope to get done and how did it unfold?
Well, technically, all we needed to get done, I mean, by tradition, this is what we call a bonding year, where we, you know, sell debt to do what people like to call public works, roads, bridges, infrastructure, that sort of stuff.
That's what I heard in advance, roads, bridges.
Yep. So that's technically what this year should have been, a non-budgeting year, as you mentioned earlier, Pete. And that's what we needed to do. But last year we didn't get a transportation bill and we didn't get a tax bill. So they came in a session saying, okay, we're going to get the transportation bill and a tax bill done and added to the bonding and the debt piece. So, but it went further than that. So that was the expectation, do something with taxes, do something with transportation, and get the bonding bill done. And we, as it ended up, as some of you may have heard, a bit of a fiasco or a chaos at the end again, it always ends this way, is that we got no bonding bill because, well, frankly, I'll be partisan. The Democrats put an amendment on the bill when it came over. And when they did that with 5 minutes left, there's no time to conference committee it, so it died.
Sure. So the Senate, they threw trains on top of it, right?
Yeah, right,
and
exactly.
Which was never it was always a non-starter for House Republicans.
Right.
And House Republicans adjourned anyway, saying it wouldn't have happened.
Right.
Why? Let me ask this. Why does it always come down to that? Why does it always come down to 2 a.m. and a last-minute gap? And why is there not a process by which something else could be figured out?
You know, when the Democrats were in charge in 13 and 14, people thought, well, one party in charge, you're going to get this done. No. They fought with each other until midnight the Sunday before adjournment. And why is it always, and, you know, obviously – to some people, I say, well, this is actually government the way it's supposed to work. People elected Republicans for the House. They took the majority.
Mm-hmm.
And the governor was still in office, and we had a Democrat Senate. Mm-hmm. This is how it's supposed to work. It's a tug and pull. That's what the people wanted. So we are a reflection of the people.
Mm-hmm.
So it worked in a way it worked the way it was supposed to. People don't like it, but it's what happens in politics. And it's that way because, look, people have self-interest. It's money.
Mm-hmm.
This is always about money.
Mm-hmm.
Gobs and gobs and billions of dollars of money. And everybody's project from north to south, east to west, from cobblestone courts and community centers and roads and bridges and pipes and flowers and bees and
Everybody thinks that their pet project is the most important.
Yes.
But talk to us a little bit about why this always ends up being an omnibus type of a bill where there's just a handful of people behind closed doors. Doesn't that really, when you say that people think that this shows that the system works. When you end up, though, with a few people behind closed doors really hammering out the details at the exclusion of the people that were of the larger group that was elected, would you say that that's really working then for the people?
Excellent point. And I think I answered your question, Pete, about it comes down to just money and resources and struggling negotiations. Everybody wants their project. So omnibus bills, they're unconstitutional. They're wrong. They're bad. They're crappy.
I wonder how he feels about that.
Wasn't sure how he felt. Now I know how he felt.
Some people might argue, well, these are single subjects. So typically you have seven or eight, you have nine budget areas, and it may be transportation or taxes or K-12 or higher ed. And they put, there might be 30 bills that relate to higher ed or at K-12.
Sure.
And they all deal with another piece of it. So, well, it's a single subject. Well, it's really not because there's a lot of different subjects within K-12.
Right.
So what happens is they can put them in there, and then in the end they bag them all up.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get behind closed doors and they shred them and pull things in and out.
Take things in. And
then it doesn't even really make sense anymore.
Well, no, it doesn't, right. because right. What's the point of a committee process with public hearings
right.
when, in the end, five people get behind closed doors with a special interest
right.
and the people got access to just mm-hmm. make a deal and shred whatever they want to shred and put mm-hmm. whatever they want in and take out. They completely change language in bills.
Who needs Nancy mm-hmm. Pelosi's you can pass the bill so you can find out what's in it when you have Mark Dayton and Tom Bach?
it's horrendous.
Right?
So hopefully next year we will either get rid of them or we'll make them much smaller and start constraining this stuff. So people are left out in the cold. It's abusive. It's abusive power, mm-hmm. and people are left out of the process. Mm-hmm. And then a bunch of people are like us. I'm elected to represent mm-hmm. 80,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
So what do I get to say in the end?
Right.
The high-paid lobbyists get in there before us.
Right. Doesn't it seem like that's the way the whole direction of politics is moving in this country, though? We're moving to an era, it seems, where there seems to be a lot of people trying to go around the rules, go around the process that was really intended to protect the rights of all of the individuals across mm-hmm. America. And there's rules and regulations and dictates coming down from on high. And all of that then excludes the values then of the people right. that are supposed to be represented by the legislators.
Well, you and Pete understand constitutionally that the Constitution and our laws are set. What separates us from other nations is our rule of law.
Right.
If you don't respect it, we are in big trouble. Mm-hmm. And that mm-hmm. happens every day mm-hmm. at the Capitol more and more frequently. And your point is well taken. I read Friedrich Hayek, Road to Serfdom,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you remember in there, there's a section, and he talks about something worse than socialist government is something in between our constitutional government. Socialist government is a corporative sort of government. Now, I like businesses,
mm-hmm. yeah.
but it has to be an even playing field.
Right.
There's just too much access by special interests mm-hmm. that start to run the state.
Mm-hmm. What you're talking about is cronyism.
Yes.
And cronyism sees no party. And
right.
that's the problem, is what you're yes. not wedded to principle, or you're wedded to a deal, or you're wedded to individual self-promotion.
Yeah, self-interest.
Self-interest. Mm-hmm. You make behind-the-scenes deals that are made to benefit the other deal makers in the room at mm-hmm. the expense of the people who were elected in the first place.
That's an excellent way to sum it up. It's cronyism. Is detrimental to our way of life. And so many people out there agree with us mm-hmm. in the sense of what we think is good and right for society. A free society with laws, limited government, a rule of law, liberty, right?
Mm-hmm.
And e pluribus unum, and God we mm-hmm. trust, and liberty. Mm-hmm. We would agree with that, but I think most people do. And we had to find out how to connect that with this, mm-hmm.
with
these with two sides, so they align.
Actually happening.
Yeah. Because mm-hmm. big government is like a big business. It's mm-hmm. has now gotten out of hand. We are the biggest business in the state of Minnesota. Government is. And if people don't like being cheated and robbed and they hate greed, they should hate government, because government is greedy, it cheats you, and it robs you every day, and it abuses you.
And it loves to grow, and it builds
That's
office
us.
Buildings that it loves to give
yeah.
you that you didn't even want in the first
yeah.
place.
Yes.
We won't go there
yes.
yet, though. I yeah. will say we're going to take a quick break, because mm-hmm. talking about cronyism, talking about government, a lot of it affects education. This is Education
yes.
Nation. We're here to
now
talk about it. There's some big things that happen in this legislative cycle that will affect the kids in Minnesota. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Education Nation.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Welcome back to Education Nation. This is Club 1220 on KLBB. It's 10:45 on Saturday morning. I am here with Rebecca Hagstrom, the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy and the headmaster of this show. And my name is Pete Hegseth, her humble guest host on this show. And we are always grateful and excited to be on the air talking about education issues that face Minnesota. I will note, before we jump into and continue our interview with Senator Chamberlain, if you are interested in this podcast or this broadcast or any other broadcast we've done, I believe there's 16 or 17 other online, either at KLBB or at libertyclassicalacademy.org, where we catalog topics from Common Core to curriculum to what else, Rebecca?
Mm-hmm. Standardized testing, safe spaces,
classical
decline
education,
of teaching history,
Western
and the
civilization.
Classrooms.
We've touched mm-hmm. on a lot of topics. It's almost exhausting. So if you like what you're hearing today, check out the podcasts and stick with us here for the remainder of our interview. So Senator Chamberlain, we want to jump into specifically the educational aspect of this mm-hmm. legislative session. What were the big proposals, first of all, on the table? Like you set the scene for us before, what were folks hoping to get done in this session?
Well, again, it wasn't a budgeting year, so we didn't have to do anything. And initially, the House had $0 for education. Well, technically $0. There was some money there, but that gets in the weeds. But technically, we didn't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. But the Senate was run by the Democrats, so they had a potpourri, a cornucopia, a variety of things.
Oh, there's money to be spent.
Can you come up with another?
They got that $900 million or $1 million surplus, right?
They had constituencies and special interests to serve. True. So we really didn't have to do anything. But there's always some holes to fill, and the Senate bill left with, you know, a couple $100 million of spending currently, and then more what we call in the tails, built-in structural increases that, you know, bind schools with mandates and additional money in from the state. So we didn't have to do anything. The House had zero, and the Senate had a couple $100 million that would have also increased mandates, task force, and spending out in the out years.
Mm-hmm. And weren't tax credits on the table this year?
Yeah, well, that was one of our deals. I had the bill. I was fortunate to have the bill in the Senate, but
You're on the Education Committee,
yes,
correct?
Yes.
I want to make sure we clarify that for the audience.
I'm on the K-12 Committee. Mm-hmm. Senator Representative Knobloch had the tax credit bill in the House. I had it in the Senate. Mm-hmm. Wasn't much for me to do. We got a hearing on it last year in the Senate. But it's a tax credit that does two things. We have it currently in the state of Minnesota. We have a tax credit and exemption mm-hmm. for K-12 expenses. Mm-hmm. But it's capped at income, and it has been adjusted for a while, and there's only a certain amount of money you can spend and get credit and exemptions mm-hmm. for, and it's capped. And it doesn't include tuition.
Right.
So we did a couple things. One, we increased the exemptions and the credits, mm-hmm. raised that over $3,000. I think it was $3,500. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, we lifted the caps for the income.
Okay.
Yeah, raise them because they haven't been raised forever. Mm-hmm. And thirdly, we did something completely new. We included tuition mm-hmm. in the for the credit. So you could get a credit for tuition you paid at a private school or, for example, at Liberty Classical. Mm-hmm. You could get, if you paid X number of dollars a year, you get up to $3,500 tax credit for it. So those were the three things. It moved in the House, and that was the House tax bill. The Senate, it was not in the Senate tax bill.
Okay. So you were actually trying to propose genuine school choice.
Yes, educational choice. It would help expand opportunities mm-hmm. for parents and for teachers. Mm-hmm. So we like to say that educational choice would vastly improve educational outcomes and liberate parents, right. families, and educators to really grow, thrive, and strive. They mm-hmm. could thrive instead of just survive in our system.
Exactly. I love that. I've said that term myself before.
That is a great phrase. Do you want them to thrive
or just survive?
Yeah, right.
Well, indeed.
Right.
And wait, would this be characterized by our friends on the left as the dirty V word, voucherize? Mm-hmm. Is that effectively what I'm sure they told you you were doing?
You guys get right to it. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Let's have a conversation. Right. Yeah, what is it about?
Mm-hmm. It's what they would usually call a voucher. Mm-hmm. And that's one way of providing opportunity for kids. You know, mm-hmm. kids from every corner of the state, every income level, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Inner city, everybody gets this opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I know it will work. It has worked. It puts the kids and the parents in charge of education. But the opposition, plain and simply, are teacher unions. Not the teachers, the union, and even some other special interests. Mm-hmm. So the unions do not want it because it starts to cut into they become less solvent. Mm-hmm. they're threatened. Mm-hmm. If you start taking money and allowing parents, God forbid, you allow parents to make choices for their children for the most important thing to them. The second most, we did it. There was a survey, a poll we just got. It's been put out there. They gave people, what's most important to you? And they gave them a list of like 15 or 20 things. Healthcare costs were the first. Public education and government spending. Hmm. And public education is second to that. So healthcare and public education. So it's extremely, extremely important to everybody in this, most people in this state. It's on top of their head. If it's not first, it's second. And the way to go is to give parents choice. For goodness sake, we let parents make decisions about cell phones, cars, shoes, you know, where they want to eat, everything in their life, except the two most important things, their doctors and health care and where their kids get to go to school.
And even on that, right, like every proposal, it's demagogued unfairly by its opponents. Mm-hmm. $3,500 tax credit, while a good thing, isn't going to pay for the majority of private schools throughout this state.
Right.
It's just it opens up the window for an opportunity for a family to maybe still do the heavy lifting of the saving and the work that would require sacrificing to send your kid to a different school. Am I correct?
You're absolutely right. It would still require some effort on the parents' part. And, you know, so the other part of that is we have, as you might be familiar with, OSAs, Opportunity Scholarships, and ESAs, Educational Savings Accounts. They will go to the next step. Those bills were written, but, of course, didn't get anything in the Senate. And we'll push it this summer. It, again, that expands choice to the not just the $3,500, but gives parents that basic formula money to take that wherever they go, and at least that offsets.
I got to ask you this question then, okay? This sort of $1 million question. Okay, so it's dead in the Senate, but it was alive in the House.
Mm-hmm.
Why, in the final version, if the House is controlled by reform-minded Republicans, so-called, why would that not be in the final House bill?
Well, that's a good question. As we mentioned earlier, they get to the end here, they have five or six people behind closed doors making deals. So I have not yet found out why that was not part of the final negotiations. That was put out there to us and others, and we were pushing that it could possibly be used for some sort of deal at the end. But in the end, not only did we not get that, but we didn't get anything for dyslexia, and they gave the governor $25 million for a preschool program that he wanted. So on top of
for universal preschool,
the idea, if you're going to give them universal preschool, give us the credit for parents.
Sure. Right. Absolutely. And I saw you gave a powerful speech about dyslexia, by the way, and Minnesota kids affected by it. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate your strong stance on that.
Something that gets forgotten here is that these tax dollars are those of the parents themselves.
Yes.
So I think groups often forget whose money they're spending. So to think that a parent would have to fight to get the money that they pay in for schools to be sent to the school of which they would like to send their child really is appalling.
It
seems very clear to me that those at the government level and the unions are used to just seeing this money as their money, not the taxpayers' money, but their own money.
Well, we have to start... school choice, educational choice, becoming more popular.
Mm-hmm.
I've attended a couple of Friedman Institute seminars in the last year. They're only a couple days long, and they talk about educational choice. When people are asked, and they're asked the right way, about two-thirds of parents support the idea of school choice.
Mm-hmm.
They want educational choice for their parents, for their kids. And why shouldn't they? It's, again, the most important thing you can do for your kid. And we know out in Stillwater we have problems. 30% of the kids in the district there don't attend Stillwater School District.
Mm-hmm.
You can argue why, but they don't. They chose to go somewhere else. Again, they should have the choice to put their kids where they want to put them and take that chance. And I know from the studies and the research and both of you as well, parents, 90% of these parents are going to make the right choice, and those kids are going to thrive and not just survive.
I was just going to say, too, one of the things that we discussed before the show was this whole issue of racial equity and how Governor Dayton wanted that to be included in his tax bill. But one of the best ways to provide that racial equity is to provide school choice, genuine school choice.
This is it's a beautiful question. I'm going to be completely honest. For 50 years, this government has been promising people something. And they haven't delivered a darn thing. The Department of Education, as you well know, Pete and Rebecca, created by Carter. We have gotten worse, demonstrably worse. You don't have to be a Harvard scholar to do the data to figure that out. We know we are.
Yeah.
In the state of Minnesota, we spend $11 billion a year, give or take, for 840,000 kids.
Wow.
And in 340 districts, and what do we get? They have been robbed. And they've been trapped. And we know the condition of Minneapolis St. Paul school districts and how many kids aren't succeeding. They're being robbed. It's abuse. It's wrong. It's immoral. And it has to stop. And the way to stop that and provide the difference and end racial disparities, give the parents choice, let their kids get educated.
Senator, I love your passion. You're getting me all fired up over here. I have to ask you a quick question for point of detail. One of the things that was included in the final bill in the House was was something with luxury sports skyboxes or something, correct? That was still included. What was that? Just very, very briefly.
Well, there's a I can't remember the exact detail, but there were tax breaks, exemptions for the Super Bowl. For that, when the Super Bowl comes there, they wanted tax exemptions for different things.
Okay, so I don't know what was given away behind closed doors. Neither do you. You weren't in the House negotiations. I certainly wasn't. Mm-hmm. But if I'm a conservative Republican who believes themselves to be, and I'm just speaking for myself here, not the show or anything like that, who believes themselves to be a reform-minded, pro-educational choice person. Mm-hmm. How do you walk into a negotiation where you're going to give away universal preschool, which no one's against educating preschoolers, it's just you believe that when you throw them into government schools early without the proper oversights, there's problems. How do I walk into that negotiation, not get school choice, but we get tax exemptions or credits or for billionaires in skyboxes? If you want to wonder why people are frustrated, why people are angry, it's because the party that says it's the party of reform doesn't fight for universal school choice or tax credits, and they give away
gifts to
the billionaires. That is cronyism. If you're elected to do one thing and you say you're going to do something, then there's got to be at least one hill you're willing to fight on, and that's a pretty darn good one in a state where education could be way better.
Right. I appreciate your passion, too, and I'm done defending bad decisions and bad votes. We had to fight for kids, and the way to fight for kids is to put them first, and I looked through this bill. When I talked about dyslexia, there's stuff in this bill for everybody. You know, if you're in agriculture and you want diagnostic software, or do you want perhaps your natural resources, you get some more $5.1 million for parks and trails.
You got to have the industrial hemp pilot program.
Right,
Gosh.
Or you get a cool quarter of a mil.
If they want to do tax exemptions for the Super Bowl or for the soccer stadium, okay, fine. But put our stuff in there. Put the kids in there.
Right. Don't they say kids first?
Kids, well, if you have probably seen some of these hearings.
Sure.
You go to a hearing with K-12, and no, few people are putting the kids first. Mm-hmm. If you present a bill in K-12, you got to go through a gauntlet of lobbyists and special interests.
So why aren't there people that are saying, let me just run that gauntlet? Why are we not at that point where we say, let the slings and arrows come? This is worth fighting for. This is a hill of principle worth standing on.
I agree, Pete. We have to pick. I think education, in my humble opinion, should be number one. And if people don't think it's right, then they can throw me out of office. But you are exactly right. We have to stand up and pick a hill. Education, an opportunity for every kid from north to south, east to west, no matter what color you are, where you're from, has to be first. And we have to tell people that we had to put an end to this Democratic abuse and cronyism and put the kids out there first so we have some real opportunity.
Well, you have gotten us, and I know our listening audience, all fired up on this Saturday morning. I love your passion. I love your commitment to kids and education. I appreciate your work in the Education Committee. We're going to have to wrap it up right there. Senator Chamberlain, thank you for your time this morning.
I loved it. Thank you very much. I'm blessed to be here.
Rebecca, closing words for Education.
Yes, well, and I just want to say thank you, too, because you've been such a generous tour guide, really, for our 10th graders. Every time they come to the Capitol, we bring them over there annually with their government and law teacher. Mm-hmm. You've been so gracious to them.
Beautiful kids.
And so we thank you for your service to the state of Minnesota, and we pray that you will continue to work hard and fight hard for kids. And we ask that our listeners will join us next week when we switch gears and we talk about Minnesota State High School League. We're going to have a special guest in to help us talk about that.
Who could that be?
Join us next Saturday.